It is time.
I know what you did.
I'm so sorry, Aunt Lysa. I never should have hit Robin. I know it. I promise it won't happen.
Be coy with me, you little whore. You kissed him. You kissed Peter.
I didn't. You don't understand.
I saw you. You can't lie to me because I saw it with my own eyes.
He kissed me. I pulled
away. Liar! Whore! He is mine! My father, my husband, my sister, they all stood between us and now they're all dead. That's what happens to people who stand between Peter and me. Look! Look down!
Lisa! This be a time, Lister. I have only loved one woman. Only one. My entire life. Your sister.
So guys, while I was off making gingerbread houses and chilling with camels, it seems like a lot has happened.
It's been...
Yes.
I was feeding the hungry and...
healing the sick.
Yeah, I was curing the sick. Yes, accurate. With laughter. With laughter. I had a little clown.
Because you're Ted Karkus, right?
Clown nose on. And I was Patch Adamsing it.
Thank you for tuning in yet again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Game of Owns. Everybody. All four of us. Full cast.
Back together again.
Full
We're all 25%ing right now.
The show that you deserve.
I like that.
You owe it to yourselves to listen to our podcast. What's the last time we met? We spoke about the teaser trailer. It's still teasing our brains.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and Micah, we haven't spoken about it out loud yet.
I'm very teased by it. Very teased indeed.
Looking forward to hearing your thoughts, Micah.
I'm just interested to see what Game of Thrones is going to come up with this week. I mean, first they dropped the poster, then they dropped the teaser trailer, and who knows what's coming this week. But
we got those new shots.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we got new photos. So this is I'm really excited for Christmas. And I'm Jewish, so that's saying a lot. I'm waiting for Game of Thrones Christmas to really give us maybe a little bit more of a sneak peek. The teaser trailer was cool in terms of, to me anyway, the words, right? And you guys spoke a lot about this on the last episode. The ink is dry. But what does it mean, right? I like the people who said, could it mean that the winds of winter is finally finished? After all this time, or could it just be that what's done is done? The past is in the past, and we need to move forward now as a community with what transpired at the end of last season, but also that everyone that we've come to love and hate needs to move forward in Westeros and out east, right?
This is all happening at the perfect time because... Today in the podcast, we are reading the last two chapters of A Storm of Swords.
Oh, gosh.
Applause.
Hey.
Right? Yay. With only an epic log, as named by some of our listeners, remaining.
It's the epic log.
Teaser trailer, new footage, small, tiny shots, basically a few frames in the 2015 HBO year-ender special video that they do, kind of encapsulating and sort of self-promoting all of the things that they were able to achieve in the past year. So a tiny taste of season six.
Really exciting for HBO that they were able to deliver during our on season. Some good content here while they're off, while they take a break. I mean, how cool is it that the show is that far along that they're able to create these polished bits from it and begin advertising already? It's an exciting time. It's exciting to think that while we were reading, the show has been shaping up and the new season is just, you know, full stop.
One of the theories that I really liked about the teaser trailer, and you guys may have touched on this a little bit, but for me, what I really liked about it was just the fact that it seemed so well thought through. And that is, for the first time, Bran could be experiencing everything that we're seeing in that teaser. Mm-hmm. You know, he's heard about so much that's gone on, but we know about his ability to warg. What if he's able to warg somehow into seeing everything that has transpired to his family and all these major events that have happened in Westeros over the course of these last several seasons?
Yeah.
And that is what motivates him to move forward and to do whatever he is going to do. I mean, that would just be mind-blowing.
He's also presumably seen the future. I mean, that's a line. They do not know what's about to come. They have no idea.
It's going to be interesting to see, as I was saying, I already said this, but...
Let's just rehash everything we said, Anna.
Interesting. Just interesting to see how they're going to make him as important, Eric, as you were saying, because he's been missing last season. So that's what I'm most excited about.
Well, so is Hodor. I can't wait to see Hodor again.
Before we jump headfirst into this week's excitement, how many of you, and I'm asking those of you that are on this podcast with me, have watched Chapter 10 and have experienced coldies and other things personally?
I experience coldies every day being its CEO, Zach.
You are
and spokesperson.
It's a way of life for Eric now. It is.
It's just a job.
We released a trailer for it that you can all watch, everyone, at patreon.com/goo. You don't have to be a patron or a supporter. Well, if you listen to the podcast, you're a supporter of the show. But if you're not technically supporting the show through Patreon, you can still watch the trailer. It's 30 seconds of beauty, Eric.
Oh, thank you. You know, I should have showered before we turned on your camera, but yes, it's I thought the acting was on.
Wait, I think one of the shots you actually are freshly showered. Hannah, is he not? That one?
Yeah,
yeah, but
I
the other
exactly
one's like
one
the diametric opposite of that. I'm in like an undershirt because we were sweating walking around New York lugging a suitcase all
yes.
day.
Yes.
With my shoes.
You know, that's part. So much happened in New York. And it's great to see it captured, to relive it. I know we talk a lot about living and reliving in the course of today's discussions, but it's so fun to be where we are at and to be doing what we are doing. And on Patreon, you really get a lot more of us, a lot more of our personalities than would normally come out in the show, although plenty of ours does or do.
Also on Patreon, we have chapter discussions that we put out before all the episodes. We can continue to have the conversation there. So definitely post your thoughts so we can read them on the show.
Spoiler alert, Hannah wrote all of the ones for this week. So.
Yeah, they're really
so you
great.
Know they're all about Jaime Lannister.
They're her personal preferences. They're very Jon Snow.
But Jaime
heavy.
Wasn't in this.
I know. Hannah
exactly.
finds a way.
I find a way. I find a way.
No, but I would definitely say Chapter 10 is a blast. I got a chance to watch it, and we have a lot of fun, and we certainly do appreciate all of you supporting the show. We couldn't do it without you. We enjoy hearing from you each and every week, and we look forward to continuing beyond A Storm of Swords. It's going to be really exciting coming up the next few weeks and even into the new year. Season 6 news is going to start ramping up, and we look forward to talking with all of you about it. I've gone through over the course of the last few seasons in knowing what was coming, and to have to talk around certain things, and you know, we're going to get to a lot of things in these next two chapters that are hugely important to the overall plot of the entire series. And then of course the epilogue, which we've teased quite a bit on this show, and you know, it was a huge issue amongst the fan base out there that didn't make it into the show. So I'm looking forward to just finally having that discussion with everybody here.
Micah, I almost read it today. I was like, I got to the end of these I just finished A Storm of Swords. Maybe I'll read the epilogue as well. And I didn't have enough time. So
just going back to what I've said in previous episodes, like, just take in the full body of context of what has taken place in this book. And now here we are. John is becoming Lord Commander of the Night's Watch.
Right.
Lysa is getting thrown out the moon door. That's wrapping up a book that has been just filled with these epic moments, from all the way back to the Red Wedding, to Joffrey's death, to Tywin's death, to the Mountain versus the Viper.
That's just this on season. that was two-thirds into the book.
Yeah.
Any of that happened.
Mm-hmm. And I'm probably missing a number of other things that just aren't coming to the top of my mind. But,
right.
You know, you just look at how much was packed into this book and you understand why it was split into two seasons. Yeah,
it's been incredible. I'm so glad that we got to share this journey with each other and with all of you listening, and to reach the moments that we reached in these chapters. Not that they've been larger than ones we've recently touched, because as we've done this the past handful of weeks, we've all kind of experienced together how these moments have been very moving. But to know that we're in the last, to know this is the last John chapter in this book, and to know that this is the last Sansa chapter in this book, and to know that these are the last two proper chapters in this book, excluding the epilogue, I don't know, it just felt special. So when John met Ghost, for example, it was just a true surge of emotion. And I thought about how we left Ghost, and I thought about how long ago it was that John crossed the wall with the wildlings, and how different things were, and how now in this chapter we're going to reach a point where a vote is being cast for him to become the 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. It's just the feels I can hardly put into words.
And both these chapters are so beautifully written that we can't help be kind of nostalgic as we read through them, I feel like, with both Jon and Sansa.
Well, that's like nostalgia inception then, because we're being nostalgic. But also both of these characters are thinking quite heavily about their childhoods. I mean, Winterfell gets a lot of play in these chapters. And their youth together with their siblings is the foremost thought on both of these point of view characters' minds in these chapters. And it's nice. It's kind of it's perfect for a bookend. It's like, okay, where have we come in this book or on our journey in general? And it's good to wrap up in that way, but it's also completely setting up what's next for these characters. And it's not like it's not completely action packed the entire way there. It's amazing and continues to impress me what George is able to do with a single chapter.
Absolutely. It's a real internal struggle for both characters, I think, especially as they reflect back on Winterfell. But the Jon chapter really throughout until maybe we get to the end and he's able to lighten up a little bit, take on a little bit more of a humorous mood. He's very much struggling with his identity in the earlier part of the chapter. He's conflicted about what he should do, what his rights really are. When he's going at it with Iron Emmett, he doesn't realize how forcefully he's attacking this person because he's sort of blanking, and he's focused on, does he really have the rightful claim to Winterfell, and what would Rob think of it? What would Catelyn think of it? He's going through all of this in his mind, and I think that it's just a really powerful opening to this chapter as he sort of goes through his decision-making process.
I feel like we should all sort of take the time that John took. I was feeling his trek. Like he was walking through Castle Black, walking through a place where we know later in this chapter, because we have watched the show, we're informed in that way. But imagine being a reader for the first time, traveling through the story, and John is going back and he's remembering his first time here. He's remembering when they stood here and then considered their vows and then decided to go north to pray to take it to the Weirwood Tree. When they fought here, and Deftik Follard was here, and this is where the Great Stair, and this is where the fire, and just learning. And
I highlighted that whole paragraph.
Well, read it. I want your silky voice to paint the image for all of us.
All right. Outside, he found he had no idea where he was going. He walked past the shell of the Lord Commander's Tower, where once he'd saved the old bear from a dead man, past the spot where Ygritte had died with that sad smile on her face, past the King's Tower, where he and Satin and Deftik Follard had waited for the Magnor and his thens, past the heap and charred remains of the great wooden stair. The inner gate was open, so John went down the tunnel through the wall. He could feel the cold around him, the weight of all the ice above his head. He walked past the place where Donal Noy and Mag the Mighty had fought and died together, through the new outer gate, and back into the pale, cold sunlight.
And he's standing close to the wall, at this proximity, he can feel the coldness coming off of it, like you would feel the heat coming off of the fire. And this is all beautifully written, like you said earlier, Micah, in it. It helps.
It reminded me a bit of the Tyrion chapter when he's kind of going through you know, beneath Maegor's Holdfast and, and the Tower of the Hand. And it's cathartic, right? He's really going through everything that has transpired to him over the course of these last few months or years. I'm not really sure the timing on all of this, but you know, I feel like in order for him to make this decision, he has to sort of walk past all these different places where these things have happened to him, these defining moments in his life at the Wall. And that allows him to finally come to the decision as to what it is he's going to do. Is he going to become Lord of Winterfell, or is he going to look to become Lord Commander?
This is the Jon Snow version of a long goodbye, of remembering the places that you've been, seeing the places that you will be, looking back on your past and having that inform your future. And like I said, we're informed by knowing Jon's future and the settlement in this chapter. But to the people that didn't when they were reading, I think it makes it that much sweeter having gone back and explored all of this, and then also thinking of, sort of in the same way, he's not physically in Winterfell, but we kind of feel like we're there when he's thinking about fighting with Rob and how they were out in the yards, but they were playing with wooden swords. And we have direct mentions even later in the Sansa chapter of Jory. And we just, I don't know, it felt so nostalgic, and it made you root for this person. And if, like I said, if you didn't know what was happening to Jon beforehand, you started this chapter really believing that he might decide to be the Lord of Winterfell, because we got to feel from his looking back that that's something he's wanted since he was so young. And we also got to feel that so much of this hardship that he's lived through his whole life also began at a very young age, first through Rob and then later through noticing the way that he was treated by Lady Catelyn.
Yeah, and I was thinking a lot about Catelyn in this chapter and how John calls her brittle, like iron, the way that a couple of chapters ago when we were talking about Stannis being brittle iron the same way. And I thought it's interesting to make that comparison, because I never would have thought of Stannis and Catelyn being the same in that way. And I can't decide if I think that that's a good comparison, but definitely John's going to be a little bit biased looking at Catelyn because of the way that she treated him.
That's exactly it. I think it's a fair comparison if you're Jon Snow. I mean, Catelyn sided with Renly in the war, for crying out loud. So it's like, well,
yeah, not quite as hard as iron, but yeah, similar.
But that's just the interpretation of John and from the upbringing that he received. I mean, you have to remember what Catelyn viewed John as. Mm-hmm. He was sort of this abomination.
Why are you here?
Sorry, I didn't mean to shit on the John celebration.
No,
here,
no, no. That's what she was thinking of John.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Like, I would just say that was that, funny.
Micah. No, I thought you meant like, Micah, why are you here? You're like,
No. She
bringing the mood down.
He was a constant everyday reminder of that Ned was unfaithful.
Unfaithful.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I think you're absolutely right.
She just couldn't handle him besting Rob at things. It's just sometimes, even though they were such an even match.
I thought it was so interesting that the first person that John recalled basically playing the role of when he was a young kid was Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight, a Targaryen. Mm-hmm. What are the chances?
Gee,
what are
the
chances,
know.
Micah?
So.
When I was reading this, I just kept thinking how great it would be to kind of have a Stark prequel and get to hear a little bit more about their sword fighting.
Growing up,
kids
in
your prequels.
The kids all fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It'd be beautiful.
It would be really beautiful.
I wanted to ask, though, what you all thought about how he doesn't feel like he belongs. At first, it's because of his memories of Catelyn and how she treated him, but then it transfers over into being Rob, and Rob saying all these things to him, and these stone kings in the crypts of Winterfell growling at him with granite tongues, you do not belong here. I mean, what kind of fucked up childhood did he go through in Winterfell that he's feeling this way?
Even a little lordling has a hard life.
I think that those crypts beneath Winterfell are probably actually terrifying, and certainly the big stone slabs of each of the kings who are laid there are very overbearing and massive. And so I think that, you know, the intimidation that John feels in general, mixed with his fever state or weakened state. And, you know, it's not hard to imagine that he would have this dream or be even be thinking about these old, long dead kings representing the ancestors of the Starks and not his blood, essentially rolling over in their graves saying, you can't take this because, and there's a lot of what impressed me with John here is because he kind of is respecting the Winterfell's history, not just of the castle itself and rebuilding and stuff, but it's gods. You know, he says Winterfell is for the old gods. He's talking about if he were to take Winterfell, he would have to basically rip up the roots of the Weirwood tree and give it over to the Red Woman. I'm just like, oh, hell no. But it's a very real reality that Jon is, I think, strongly against even considering. So there's that guilt, too.
I think that Jon absolutely feels guilty. I think that he feels guilty, as we were talking about in his last chapter, about him even dreaming of being Lord of Winterfell, just because of what that means for his family. I think that he feels guilty about ripping up the Weirwood tree, which is the heart and soul of who he is. And so I think there's this mix of the way that Catelyn treated him, you know, comments that Rob has said, and also his own guilt of feeling like he can't live up to who he could potentially be as the Lord of Winterfell.
What can he? Grit wanted him to be a wildling. Stannis wants him to be Lord of Winterfell. But what does Jon want? That's a question he asks mm-hmm. himself. And he's pouring over these thoughts after we get this beautiful look back at the inside of his life and sort of reliving what we've lived through his eyes. And he's sitting on this stump and he's feeling closer to a decision. And he starts to feel hungry, and he starts to crave to fill his belly with flesh of a scared deer or a proud elk. And I immediately filled up.
Cold hands.
I was like, no, it's Ghost. It's Ghost. I called for Shrek to come by my side. I was like, come here, buddy.
Aww.
It just sort of happens. You just kind of, I don't know. If I see a dog on TV or in a movie or something, or even like if a friend sends me a YouTube video of a funny dog, it's like, I need him to come over here just because. So that happened. And Ghost came and I rejoiced. I literally felt.
Yeah.
Did you guys too? Like, I felt joy.
Absolutely.
From this book today.
They were wrestling in the snow.
Yes.
It's like I'm laughing out loud while I'm reading it. It's so great. I drew a little heart next to it in my book. I think it's great that as soon as John doesn't forget who he is, but he can't find who he is. Then
yeah.
That's the second that Ghost reappears.
Mm-hmm.
He's been gone.
What
for
a coincidence.
So long. And good job, George R. R. Martin.
Yeah. Zach, you touched right on it, though, in terms of the decision, right? It does seem like when he says he knew what he wanted all along, that he was going to go in the direction of accepting Stannis' offer to become Lord of Winterfell. And right at that moment, Ghost appears and he looks into Ghost's eyes.
Oh, beautiful moment.
And the comparison of Ghost to a Weirwood completely shifts the decision making.
And it blew my mind.
The other direction. Red eyes, John realized, but not like Melisandre's. He had a Weirwood's eyes. Huh. Red eyes, red mouth, white fur, blood and bone, like a heart tree. He belongs to the old gods, this one.
Mm.
And he alone of all the direwolves was white. 6 pups they'd found in the late summer snows. Him and Rob. 5 that were gray and black and brown for the 5 Starks. And 1 white as snow.
These children are destined for greatness, damn it.
Destiny.
Destiny.
You almost think that this is going to make him choose Winterfell, almost.
Yeah, you really
right?
do, a kind bit. Of. Yeah, it could go either way.
Just still. A little bit, just because, you know, he's talking about his family. He's like, this is who he is. But he doesn't.
His allegiance to, I guess, what it's clear. The fact that he and Ghost
yeah.
are what they are. It's clear he cannot forsake who he is, who his people are, and who him and his pal are. And it's just the source of all of this. And I think even John kind of feels the responsibility. I don't know quite to the level that we'd like him to, but feels the responsibility of, hey, like, I matter. I'm someone that matters. And this is happening to us and in this world. There's a shadow of a threat. There's a king at my wall. I matter. Ghost matters. He's back with me. I'm a warg, for God's sakes. And like I said, he's not quite connected at the level that that would be really fun for the book, like this sort of third wall, fourth wall awareness. But this chapter was a sort of an awakening for John, and it was such a great sort of release for us, a bit of just, okay, Ghost is back. John has made up his mind. And meanwhile, we have Sam, we know, has been working very diligently in the background. And this leads into what I copied the quote down that you just read, Micah, and then my note directly after that was just caps, and it just says, holy shit, this scene. I can't even begin, to those of you listening at home who haven't read this and have only watched the show, I am angry. I think I am upset. I am upset that this isn't the way John was elected in the TV series. This was beyond epic.
And you know that John walks into that room with just a little bit more swagger when he has Ghost by his side. You can just read it.
He has a massive wolf at his side.
At the same time, he's walking into that room just to get some food for the both of them. He's not at all expecting, A, that there is no food, and that, B, he would be leaving elected commander of the Night's Watch.
Right. And that's what makes it so beautiful. Not particularly, but this isn't, John wasn't planning to make an entrance. This is just who he is naturally. Mm-hmm. He's just Jon Snow walking from beyond the wall. He's been in spitting range of all of these men that he was a part of previously and that now are prisoners to Stannis Baratheon, and walks back with his direwolf, who he can connect with mentally. And after they just got done wrestling beautifully in the snow, and I'm going to go feed him, and walks into the mess hall, and everyone hushes, and the click of his heels can be heard, and he's walking with this massive beast beside him. How he must look to his brothers of the Night's Watch. How he must feel.
Yeah, it's definitely an impressive scene, and we know that Janos Slynt has been conspiring. Thorne has been working on his behalf for much of the last several John and Sam chapters that we've been reading to get Slynt elected Lord Commander. But as you alluded to earlier, Sam has been doing some serious work behind the scenes. We saw in the last Sam chapter him trying to convince Cotter Pike, him trying to convince Dennis Malister, and we finally see the results of all of his hard work come to a head here, and Slynt is basically put to shame. Not by the people we would expect, but really from others who just seem to think that he's a bit of a douche, and his lead slowly slips away as the chapter comes to a close, and we're left with John being elected thanks to Dolorous Ed, really, who dropped his name in there for a homecoming king. And
the upset of the century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I really like the moment towards the end of the chapter with Dennis Malister and John.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really nice.
It was a really cool moment. Of course, Cotter Pike had his jabs to throw in
there.
You'll
muck this up. I'm going to rip your liver out and eat it raw with onions. I'm not as good as you.
No, that was actually pretty good. I like that.
That was pretty good.
A plus.
Thank you.
But just such a dignified Dennis Malister. Do not make me die regretful. Your uncle was a great man, your lord father and his father as well. I shall expect full as much of you.
A lot of handshaking, backsmacking.
Goodwill. Even before going into it, Othu Yarwick standing up and giving John saying those nice things about him, saying that he has essentially changed his mind because John actually has more experience and might be a better Lord Commander. Like, it's such goodwill.
He says, now that I'm standing here, I don't recall why I thought Slynt would be such a good choice.
Can we just appreciate it again? Just let it wash over us how Jon Snow walks into... I mean, he's off wrestling with the direwolf. That's why he can't be there when you guys are voting, right?
Yeah.
He's just busy doing his own thing. He walks in and Thorne says something like, ah, the Turncloak graces us with his presence. And Jon's like, how do you throw shade at the charmingly handsome young man walking in with a giant direwolf at his side?
I think he nearly lost his face at one point. The wolf was growling.
And Ghost looks how he looks. He's not only a direwolf, but he's a snow white albino, red eyed, weirwood tree looking direwolf walking at Jon's side. He's been north of the wall for ages. He's hungry. He's lean. He's ready to eat some food. You're throwing shade in his direction.
Yeah.
You're voting for Lord Commander. All of a sudden, your plan is being thwarted by his plan and his friends' plans. The guys that you thought would amount to nothing, Alistair Thorne, rose up and took your seats of power at the Night's Watch.
Well, and then on top of that, we've got the raven that comes out of the kettle.
Yes. I thought that was the decision maker. That's what did it.
I can't even. I read that and I was like, why wasn't this in the show? This is incredible.
Well, by the way, I will say I'm not going to go into detail about it, but Simon, council member and friend Simon, had a great thought about that that I didn't even think of. I don't know if anybody else thought of it, but actually, can we read it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, go for it.
So this was his own for the John chapter. He said, Sam the wizard, Sam the wonder, Sam, Sam the Marvel man, he did it. Sam has finally become a wizard, and sadly the own goes to him and another man who knowingly seals John's fate. Ed Tollett stood up. By me? Aye, it is a terrible thing to do to a friend, but better you than me. How right he is. But who hid the raven? Maester Aemon? It would not be proper for a maester to be seen favoring one contender. So I really like that, Simon.
Oh, gosh.
That was great.
And here I am thinking that John was truly fated by the old gods and the new.
Maybe he was.
Just the old guys. That one old guy.
Yeah.
Old guys really like Jon Snow.
Well, it's just another moment where George R. R. Martin's very ambiguously magical, I guess is the only way that I can think to describe it, and how they have these super magical moments like the direwolf and the raven coming out of the kettle, but it's still grounded in such a human way that we almost have to remind ourselves that this is a fantasy. And I think that we do that quite a bit on this show, but it was just one of those moments where
it's like, really, the Lord Commander's raven is coming out of the kettle now.
Yeah.
He's saying Snow. He's standing on John's shoulder like he used to do, Lord Commander.
Yeah, how cool is that? If he wasn't already cool with the giant wolf by his side, now he's got a raven on his shoulder,
exactly.
too. I don't understand why that never made it to the show.
It
or
is
like
literally
a poster
a crime.
For
this
the
wasn't
show.
Adapted. It's
I know.
Wow.
But it's like,
should we acted out ourselves?
You know how Sherlock Holmes has like the pipe and the bowler hat, and that's like his iconic thing.
Right.
Jon Snow should be the raven, the bird on his shoulder, and the wolf by his side.
Oh my gosh. Could
and
you
also
imagine
a bowler hat.
So that's it. So that's I'm just red in the face. Like I have when your mouth, you get like tired from laughing or smiling so much, you get sore, your face muscles do. I feel that way now just talking about it with you guys, because we love the story, obviously, but this is one of the cooler scenes I've read out of any book. And it was so cool how it happened. And John seemed, through his chapter two, obviously we get so much more from the book, obviously. And we've gone through a lot of really important moments on this podcast after the fact. A lot of moments that we've shared on the show, we've shared how all of them through the TV show, that are the large ones for the most part. And this was one of the more satisfying, I think, for me to go through and to just feel it through John's narrative. And to feel his happiness in the chapter, speaking to Dennis Malister following the Raven incident, hearing Pip and Gren share in this joy, and it felt kind of like the end of a Potter novel almost, where they were like setting up for like the joy.
Fred and George.
Yeah, exactly. But just the hopefulness to the future, looking forward.
Yeah. And Pip and Gren are alive.
Yeah, they're alive.
Yeah.
They're cheering their friend on as being the new Lord Commander. Hope that, will you take your meals up in your solar? Like, inside jokes. It was just fun. Ridiculous.
John's squad.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't imagine finishing this book.
He has to face King Stannis.
Think about the weight there between releases.
But he does have a direwolf by his side now.
Yeah, that's true. Might have a little bit more traction with the king.
I wonder what Melisandre thinks of the direwolf.
She's probably jealous she doesn't have a direwolf. Who wouldn't?
That'd be pretty cool. Her shadow child can just, if she can still summon him, if he isn't lost to the wind, she could have him running around by her side. I still don't know how, I guess, legal it was or how right it was that Stannis locked them all in without food to get them to do the vote. Like, that's still a little bit of, just the fact that Jon, in the end with the wine, he only has one because he has a king to face. I'm thinking, okay, he's still measuring. He's not allowing himself to be too overjoyed or happy. I mean, he is in a way. He's cracked a smile, and that's not something he's done in a while. And that also leads, I mean, it's a very similar thing with Sansa. in the Sansa chapter. Like, she, beginning John's chapter, he was not happy at all. He was trying to hurt himself, basically, on the practice yard. And then look at what this wonderful thing happened, and now he's Lord Commander. May he reign a long time. But Sansa's sort of the same way. Like, she begins the chapter down, thinking about the past, like the arcs that these characters have. We always talk about how chapters go together, but, well, actually, I wouldn't say Sansa ends a chapter altogether very happy.
I was going to say, she's not exactly.
Never mind, forget it.
Ending her chapter on a high note, although
her
she
day
does
improves
get a reprieve when she doesn't get her ass thrown out the room door.
Oh, God.
But,
you know what I say?
Her day improves briefly when she...
No,
all right, this
all
is
all
the
Fly
Sayer chapter, everyone. Hallowed
yes.
be thy name.
All I know is that if Mord was there, nothing would have happened to Sansa.
So yet again, another beautiful opportunity to get the real story from old George R. R. Martin. This chapter was a mammoth of a chapter. A lot of Sansa, a lot of Peter, a lot of good times.
And yeah. Just as much Robert as I could have tolerated.
There's a lot of Robert too, right?
Just enough.
Just enough, yeah.
I know I've mentioned this a couple of times when we've done these last few episodes about how the story has sort of come full circle a little bit. We get a lot of that at the end of this chapter. And to me, it's just the brilliance in the writing that we see time and again. The fact that no small detail goes without some sort of conclusion. So we've talked a lot about the cat's paw that went after Bran and how that was tied into the Jaime and Tyrion chapters towards the end of this book. Mm. Now we get, at the very end of this chapter, a lot of insight into the past relationships between Lysa and Peter and Catelyn and Hoster Tully and the foundation upon which this entire series up until this point has taken place in terms of the murder of Jon Arryn. And we learn what perpetuated all of that. And you really feel for Lysa, not to jump too far ahead, because I know we want to talk about sort of the intro to this chapter, but I'm impressed at how well this is all woven together as you come to a conclusion in A Storm of Swords. This is the last real chapter in the book. And yet you're getting all these little nuggets of information that you were probably trying to solve back in A Game of Thrones.
Which I think somebody, I can't remember who it was, who sent in their own a couple weeks ago talking about how the end of book three kind of wraps up part one of the story. Mm-hmm. And I really like that because I think that that just plays right to your point, Micah. I mean, we're getting answers to questions we had since the first couple pages. So
I remember how big of a reveal this was when we found this out through the show and reading it and talking about it again. I'm so happy to do because it really does sort of sink in, especially after you've journeyed through Sansa's perspective in the book and you kind of feel the distance they travel rather than it being just a cut and something that's visual. You feel how dangerous it was for her to escape King's Landing and then for Peter to murder Dantos and then for them to sail and to visit the Fingers and to learn of his past and to really, really just build this narrative structure up. And then now to be here, and that's excluding everything else that happened in this chapter, but just the knowledge of the past and learning sincerely how Peter Baelish has ascended to the level that he is. It's just all of it's fascinating. All of it is wonderful, and it does just beautiful work to have Catelyn's sister. And we started at Catelyn's home in Winterfell. So like you said, Hannah, sort of wrapping up this first part of, let's call it the first part of A Song of Ice and Fire, if that truly is transitionally where we are at the end of A Storm of Swords, for it to end like it has with the people that it has ended with and for it to be positioned so much toward the future, what a beautiful, beautiful execution of ideas.
It really is, and the way that the chapter opens, Sansa wakes up, and then she eventually makes her way outside as the snow is coming down to build this unbelievable snow castle. But the fact that, very much like the previous chapter, where Jon is reflecting back on his time at Winterfell, Sansa does the same. She thinks back to the day that they first left, and that Rob had melting flakes in his hair when he hugged her, and the snowball that Arya you know, was trying to make, kept falling apart in her hands. And she later remembers this whole snowball fight that she had with Arya and how times were just so much more simpler. And you realize just how far she has come as a character. You realize what has happened to the Stark family over the course of these books and how they've just been torn apart, and how, you know, what she's reflecting back on is so much innocence, yet what has happened over the course of these last three books has been anything but that.
And also with the reveal at the end that, I mean, Lysa essentially sent Catelyn false information, which I think we can all agree, I mean, we know it set the entire series in motion, but it ultimately led to the death of the Starks, and painting, having the Starks face off against the Lannisters has not been kind to the family, and it just, it comes out because of this jealousy that Lysa has always had towards Catelyn. And this is, I mean, I'm, even though a lot is being wrapped up right now, there were a lot of, like, accusations made and harsh things that were leveled at Sansa about Catelyn that I'm not sure how I feel about.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of, you know she's crazy, so how right is she?
Well, Lysa's coming from a place of pure pain, it seems like, from everything that has transpired to her. Like, if you are to believe her story, at least parts of it, what was done to her because of her relationship with Peter was pretty intense and pretty harsh, especially on the part of Hoster Tully. We learned that she was pregnant at one time with Peter's child and basically forced to have an abortion, or Tansy. The kid was taken away. But yeah, Tansy finally is revealed.
That was a slow burn, right?
Yeah, a bit of a slow burn. That's a long time ago. But another one of those nuggets that's another one of those loose ends that's tied up. But that is pretty hard. I got to imagine that on the part of Lysa, and so when she sees what she saw, or what she thinks she saw in terms of Peter and Sansa kissing, it's a flashback to Catelyn.
You can almost sympathize with her for snapping that way, which, again, great on George R. R. Martin, because he always writes these crazy characters and gives you moments where you sympathize with them when you shouldn't. And we see so many different dimensions to Lysa in this chapter, which is pretty great.
Right when she gets exactly what she wants, Peter is at the Eyrie with her. John Arryn is gone. She has the man that she wants. Right when she gets what she wants, she looks outside of the window and sees him just kissing the beautiful Sansa in front of this fortress of snow that they basically built together.
Yeah, what a giant middle finger in the snow to Lysa.
Exactly.
To, you know?
Do you think that Peter did that on purpose?
It's a tough call, because I think he's a very smart and tactical person. He obviously would know that she'd be. I mean, he has used this person to be such a crucial tool in his rise. She was basically his first access to so much that led him to where he is now. You would think that he knows this person well enough to understand her. Let's just say suspect and jealousy on the matter. But honestly, I think that maybe he just was truly overcome with her beauty and just his drive to kiss her on the face. I don't know.
I wonder if Sansa is going to end up being a weakness for him.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. If he didn't know that Lysa was staring at him, then this is the first instance of that happening. Or not the first, but definitely a clear instance, because it's basically... Yeah, it ended like it has. This is not very advantageous.
Mm-hmm.
Baelish is very opportunistic, and I don't think that he could have known how the end part of this chapter was going to play itself out, at least from a timing standpoint. I'm sure his plan was to eventually kill Lysa in some capacity, but with how fast this perpetuates itself. And I think there's moments where he's actually nervous that she might actually throw Sansa out of the moon door, and that would probably set him back a little bit in terms of his plans, because despite how he may feel for Sansa, she is still a part of his master plan, which,
and so is
nothing else. Yeah, no, absolutely. And if nothing else, this chapter shows what an absolute masterful puppeteer Baelish is. Like, he is the mastermind of We thought Varys was good.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Baelish is on another level, at least from what we learned here. I don't know what we're going to learn about Varys in the future, but this to me was such an eye-opening chapter to close out the regular series of chapters in A Storm of Swords, to learn all of this.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. The man set in motion this entire plot. Most of what we've read is a result of actions that he took.
He killed Ned, damn it.
He did.
He did.
Yeah.
Don't go back and watch season one if you have any care in your heart. Just don't.
And maybe if we ever get a Baelish point of view chapter, we can feel somewhat sympathetic for him. But I don't think you could feel any empathy right now for this man, because he preyed on the emotions of Lysa in order to get what he wanted. And that was the Starks and the Lannisters to go after each other, and everything that's a fallout is a result of his work and his craft and what he's been able to do. He's a sinister motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. He is. I don't feel sympathy for him, but I do got to give him props.
Yeah, how much do you guys root for him? Let's just talk about that here.
Like over Varys or in general?
Just in general. Let's leave Varys out of the equation. How much do you root for Peter? Just his brutal honesty. He says, my sweet, silly, jealous wife. This is after she basically throws Sansa out of the moon door. She's holding her outside of the moon door. And we'll get to it. He's holding her. He says, my sweet, silly, jealous wife. I've only loved one woman. I promise you. Lysa Arryn smiled tremulously. Only one? Oh, Peter, do you swear it? Only one? Only cat.
I mean, how cool is that?
It parallels, though, what happened earlier in their youth, right? When Baelish and Lysa
called her the other name.
Yeah.
Got together for the first time.
Yeah, but he was
stone
sober this time.
Yeah.
And it was right before he kills her.
That's egg on her face there for not realizing then. It is actually a tragedy, the tragedy of Lysa Arryn.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing, her entire, it's rough. And like you said, Hannah, you can't help but to sympathize for even characters who lose their mind and threaten someone like Sansa. She's basically been second best her entire life, and she clearly doesn't have the fortitude to rise beyond that station and to become more confident in herself and less insecure, and it has spiraled. And by the help of Peter not really allowing her to grow into a full person, by basically keeping her at his side by proxy throughout all of these years as he rose, they've sort of entwined their fates. And to her, it's very, very important. And to him, it's a tool. And so it's just been a very difficult dichotomy. And I think that the fact that Peter basically took an opportunity to finally end it was an incredibly sharp thing for him to do, considering everything else. And it's like just doing nothing but hammering forward what you said, Micah, just proving how big of a mastermind he was. After learning about all the things that he's done, to then murder her in her own throne room, for all intents and purposes, and then to blame it on Marillion was
she is a pawn, and he's very selfish. Like, again, what he does to Sansa by kissing her and taking advantage of that moment, and she can't get away. And this is the first moment. I mean, they've been bonding, building this snow fortress together, and I love how she's not intending at first to build Winterfell. You know, it says it was only a castle when she began, but before very long, Sansa knew it was Winterfell. She's finding this desire in herself to recreate, to memorize. I know we talked about the nostalgia, but Peter, who's never been there and has probably would spit on the place if he ever were there, you know, is helping her build, because he's probably built a few things out of mud or snow in his own life. And he's helping her. And there's this moment where she's allowing herself to be happy, right? She's dreading being alone, left in the Eyrie with this crazy woman, her aunt, all this time. And he comes back, and they have this moment that is just taken too far, because ultimately Peter is about himself. And I know it causes Lysa to act the way she does, and then he has to respond but accordingly. But it's also just, it is all the time Baelish. It's always Baelish doing what he feels compelled to do, and I worry if he's any better than Marillion. I know Sansa compares sort of the advances and stuff, but Baelish is not, he does not
he's smarter.
Have Sansa's interests.
Marillion kind of strikes me as a younger version, less refined than him, and both preying on the same person.
Yeah. But I mean, Baelish is not, he's not a father figure to her. He's not even an uncle figure. If you think about what he's doing and how wrong it is.
A dirty uncle.
I mean, dirty uncle. It's just as bad as what he's done with Lysa, essentially. He's manipulating her. He's playing off of his love and taking only what he can.
Real quick, I did want to ask about the building of Winterfell, because I thought it was a bit symbolic.
Yeah.
That you had Sansa first building it by herself, and then along comes Baelish to help her finish it off. And I wondered, looking ahead into the series, certainly we know how the show has taken it in their specific direction, but I do wonder if that is any sort of foreshadowing in terms of rebuilding back up what has been destroyed. Is it going to be Sansa who is ultimately going to raise Winterfell back up?
We've gotten beautiful prose from characters like Daenerys, this nice prophetic imagery filled with symbolism. And we feel her importance, and we feel her story means so much. And so we take so much of that to heart, right, in our minds, and we try to apply that to the future. Even Tyrion in a hallway seeing a dragon lit at the end of the tunnel. Dany's not even there. By proxy, Micah, you were like, aha, this has something to do with Daenerys, right? Like, let's really think about this, because we know that she has such a bright and important future. This part of the chapter, I truly believe, just from the moment she stepped out into the snow, could rival all of the prose that George has written for other, maybe more important characters. This was a truly beautiful moment that Sansa experienced. All of it said so much more than it literally said. I feel like we were meant to take that away from it. And I've read it a few times. I just wanted to sort of feel what she was doing and how this was kind of, if it was to be taken literally, Micah, maybe she will have something to do with the rebuilding effort, and maybe the practiced hand of Peter Baelish will allow her to do the more difficult things, if that will happen. Maybe she will be a weakness, like she was a weakness for him at the end of all of it, when he ended up kissing her in front of everyone to see and causing all of this trouble in his life and forcing him to do something that will probably cause a rift in his plans, at least make him shift it. Maybe all of that is a big symbol, we'll say. Maybe all of it's just a isolated incident that will paint what's going to happen later. But even beyond that, I thought of what it meant for Sansa as a person, right? Building her home and then the wrath of someone silly and ignorant destroying it and how she felt against it. I don't think that she's going to be someone to trifle with.
Absolutely.
If this
not.
Ends up growing no. into what I think it is.
She rips off the doll's head, right? I mean, that could also be very symbolic in terms of just, like you said, not being somebody to trifle with. She's going to be very protective of her home if she does, in fact, go back to Winterfell, or maybe wherever she makes her new home. I think we're seeing a change in character here for her. But I do like how you said it was sort of a very tender moment that you have as she's rebuilding Winterfell, and she's recollecting all these little intricate details that she probably didn't even think she remembered to begin with, how it all just came back so quickly, and it was almost as if there was nothing to it as she continued to build out the castle. So I really just think this chapter is unbelievably written, from this part to when she enters, to face off with Lysa, just like almost like entering an ice castle, if you will, of, you know, the wind is howling outside, and just the way that it's described, it's intense.
I was tempted by the grandeur of these two chapters to move on and read the epilogue. I didn't, but I think after we're done recording, we have clearance, right, to just go ahead and read the next chapter, the final part of A Storm of Swords.
Episode preparation, I guess, right?
Right. Technically, we've recorded this episode, so we're okay to do that. Right?
But just text us after.
I don't know. We might have to just wait. I think we were talking about recording directly after we all read it. I know that, Micah, you've literally been building this up to me for years.
It's one of those defining chapters. There's no other way to describe it, because you think about it, and you'll know what I'm talking about once you've read the chapter.
Okay.
You know, we've gone through this book, and we touched on it earlier, all these major epic events that take place throughout A Storm of Swords, and then you end on this note, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on?
I mean, I already feel that way now after the Baelish thing, so, yeah. And John, a crow perching on his shoulder saying, corn, kettle. So yeah. I'm just excited to be doing this and to be sharing it with all of you. Let us own now, I guess, the last time that we're going to own a proper point of view chapter in A Storm of Swords, these last two.
I don't even believe it. If it was really Master Aemon who trained that bird to do what he did, or caused that, if the events of the crow to happen, then he would absolutely get my own. But I think for now I'm in this time of uncertainty. There's only certainty in the wingman, success of the wingman Sam the Wizard, who made all of this possible. And I mean, John's name was brought up when he wasn't even in the room. And John has not participated in any of the voting. He's kept himself out, but he's still managed through good cold reason and a little bit of manipulation on Sam's part to become the new Lord Commander. And it's really all Sam when it comes down to it. So own to Sam for essentially deciding and changing the fate and the course of not just John's life, but all of their lives.
Nice.
You've earned it, buddy.
I can't decide. I'm just going to go with this. My own, I'm going to give to John when he's walking through the hall and he's kind of like, what's going on? And Maester Aemon answers, your name has been put forth as Lord Commander, yeah. John. And it goes, that was so absurd that John had to smile. I can just imagine his little smile. I love it.
Did you put your name into the Goblet of Fire?
No, of course.
No,
my
you did,
own
Dumbledore.
Well, my own's also going to John. For wrestling with the direwolf, who is his best friend and counterpart, and for entering the hall amidst people arguing about whether or not he should lead them into the future. Jon Snow, I understand why you are such a crowd favorite. I truly, truly understand. Damn it.
It's the hair. my own, I'm going to give it to Lord Commander Mormont's Raven for just
that's
being
good.
There when it counted, yes. And swaying the vote in the direction of Jon Snow.
Well, if even the Ravens want him as Lord Commander.
I truly didn't see that coming. That was so nice.
And I have a Stark to award my own for the next chapter, but it is, again, not the point of view character. I'm giving my own for the Sansa chapter to Bran Stark. For the most successfully defensible position in a snowball fight, sitting on top above, not being chaseable because he can climb so good, you know, and Sansa chased Arya around and they had this amazing fight together. But I think Bran knows how to pick his spots. And I think Bran was the true winner, true owner of that snowball fight that they had when they were young. So own to Bran.
I'm going to give my own just to Sansa as a whole character because I love her so much. And I think that you just read what she's going through in this chapter. I mean, Marillion's undressing her with his eyes and Littlefinger's kissing her and she almost gets pushed out of the moon door.
Yeah.
And I think that her whole journey, the fact that she's still alive and still playing this game, I mean, she's kind of a pawn, but, you know, she's still alive and still got her wits about her. I love her so much. And I think out of all the characters in this whole series, she is who I'm most excited to see, as we were talking about earlier, where her journey takes her. So, own to her.
It's such an anomaly, right? Like, we see clear paths in front of a lot of characters, but she still feels, to this day, like such a wild card.
Yeah. So
She's heir to Winterfell.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's true. I'm excited for what she has in store for herself.
My own goes to Peter Baelish. Because he's Geppetto and Westeros is Pinocchio.
That's awesome. Wow.
Oh, gosh. My own goes to the Gardens of Winterfell. Winterfell, Sansa tells us, is never altogether too cold, even though it's in the brutal north. The hot springs beneath it casually heat the fortress, casually heat their castle. First off, amazing.
Yep.
That place sounds incredible. But they have a glass-ceilinged greenhouse inside of Winterfell where they keep a fresh supply of vegetables I just think that that's awesome. I know that it's a bit off kilter, and it may be a la classic owns of my pastimes in Game of Owns. You're like, oh, that's a own that sounds like something you would have done back in the day, or something that Eric would have done a few weeks ago. Well, damn it. Damn it. Those gardens are awesome, right, guys?
Let's be clear. We can own anything we want and for any reason that we want.
Yeah, Eric, we can own whatever we want.
But isn't it convenient to just go with the point of view chapter because you're your character, because you're in their head?
It was hard not to give it to John for what he did. And, of course, Sansa deserves countless owns for her final chapter in the Storm of Swords. But I loved, through his perspective and through her perspective, getting so much more of Winterfell. I cannot wait for season 6. Hopefully there is much more Winterfell. Cannot wait for these next two books. Hopefully we get a lot more. It's just, there's so much to be excited about. And those of you who wrote in to us have a lot to live up to, because I don't know if anyone can top that greenhouse. I'm just saying. That's a pretty cool.
I would
naturally
I would
heated from the earth. Think about it.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Well, apparently the owns are so good that only three of us can handle them at one time.
I'm sorry.
Zach's got to go. I hear there's a voting taking place, and he's a new candidate somewhere.
Strike and I, we have to leave together.
Don't forget the raven. Just grab a stray pigeon. Just grab a stray LA pigeon on your way to where you're going.
I read all of your owns. They're beautiful. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
See ya. Come back soon.
All right. Over on Twitter, we heard from Pluisa. Pamela Louisa says, John owned goes to Ghost, who always shows up when John needs a moral compass. Very true. And Sansa owned goes to the senses. Quote, it was the taste of Winterfell, the taste of innocence, the taste of dreams.
That's great.
That is good. Winterfell only exists in a place of dreams.
Next on Twitter, Jules says, John owned goes to Cotter Pike. Cotter Pike owns John and Janos. Hashtag say what you really think. And Sansa owns Lord Robert, as even Joffrey was sound in body. She probably wanted to put his head in the gates of Winterfell. Those are my first owns, as I've just caught up with you. Thanks for such a great podcast. I love hearing your passion for Game of Thrones.
Thanks, Jules.
Thanks for your first owns.
Yeah, any child who needs to say, I'm a giant, I'm a giant, as he stomps over castles and stuff is probably not a giant. But I guess in the context, it kind of worked, but...
And now Sansa's missing Joffrey's body. Just like that Justin Bieber song. Okay.
You know what I'm missing? I'm missing a steak sandwich. And Steak Sandwich over on Twitter at Steak Sandwich 1 says, John owned to Cotton Pike for being the best damn coolest MC since Damn Martin. Quote, gold cloaks trained to lick your bloody arse. Follow-up tweet, Steak Sandwich. That was Dean Martin, freaking autocorrect. Okay, so wait. It was Dean Martin, not Dan Martin, but it's still Cotton Pike.
Yeah. autocorrect is rough.
Steak Sandwich is having some problems with the autocorrect.
Yeah, this is lost in the Universal Translator is not working. Steak Sandwich follows up, oh, Sansa own to Peter for the best, oh no, he didn't. Quote, I've only loved woman, I promise you, only cat. That's pimpin'.
This might be my favorite own.
And Eric, what I think you meant to say was, gold cloaks trained to lick your bloody arse.
Exactly. That's exactly what I meant to say with your voice.
We also heard from Susan Stacy, who says, for Sansa, Littlefinger owns by continuing to confound all, especially Lysa. Mm-hmm. And for Jon, Lord Mormont's Raven owns the election with snow, snow, corn, corn, kettle, kettle. I can't do Raven.
That's close.
Only Ironborn.
Brienne of Tarth says, John own goes to Sam for, in Pip's eyes, finally becoming a wizard. Sansa's own goes to Lysa and Peter for being Westeros' most dysfunctional couple, if only briefly. Most dysfunctional couple. That's a bold statement.
I love that. Like, the reward is a trip through the moon door. Jen Calhoun over on Twitter owned to Ed for putting John up for Lord Commander. This is Dollar said. Quote, it's a terrible, cruel thing to do to a friend, but better than you than me.
The best.
And Jen also writes for Sansa, lots of ownage in Sansa's chapter, but mine goes to the knowledge Lysa drops about Jon Arryn's death before she herself drops.
Yeah. Baelish didn't really want that info to be put out there, I don't think.
No. Uh-uh. And now somebody else who wasn't in the show knows it.
This is true. Two parts rye. Lord Janos continues to own Westeros Asshat of the Year Award.
Yes.
Yes, he does.
Over on Facebook, we had Mark Mahal say, my very first owns. Awesome. Hey. Doing my own reread and finally caught up to Goo about 8 chapters back. Looking forward to Feast. Anyway, .. John, own goes to Mormont's Raven for being the deciding factor in the election. Or should I give the own to the skin changer who may have sent him? Interesting.
That's what I thought was going on, maybe.
Interesting. And then own, Sansa own goes to the ghost of High Heart who predicted the maiden slaying a savage giant in a castle made of snow. But is a giant little Robert's doll or a certain titan of Braavos disguising himself as a mockingbird? Can't wait for Winterfell's plot in Wins/season 6. Mark's got some good owns for his first owns.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
Well done.
And Reese Palazzolo says on Facebook, John. Own goes to John for winning the trifecta. Not only does he get Ghost back in this chapter, but he scores the old bean's raven. The old bean? Old bean's raven. And becomes Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. Hashtag, everything is coming up, John. And Sansa, my own for the Sansa chapter goes to Lysa Arryn, the true epitome of the term batshit crazy.
Yes, or as Eric likes to say,
crazier than a shithouse rat.
Jennifer Bandle says, for John, I could give it to John's snarky comments. What are you doing here? Bathing, but don't let me spoil your plotting. And you're late for supper. Then get out of my way, sir. Or to Ghost's reappearance, or to Lord Mormont's Raven. But I think I'll have to give it to Dolores Ed for putting John's name into the Goblet of Fire. No, putting John's name forth and being so dolorous about it. By me? Aye, it's a terrible, cruel thing to do to a friend, but better you than me. For Sansa, the beautiful, and thanks to George R. R. Martin, painful memories of childhood and leaving Winterfell combined with the breathtakingly beautiful descriptions of snowfall in the Eyrie and Sansa building her home in the snow. Or, to the ghost of High Heart, there you go, another one for High Heart, I dreamt of a maid at a feast with purple serpents in her hair, venom dripping from her fangs. From their fangs. And later I dreamt that maid again, slaying a savage giant in a castle built of snow.
I'm really glad that you guys are bringing that up in the owns, because we didn't have a chance to talk about it, and I think it's important.
And, Jennifer, your owns are not too long.
Yes.
So don't worry.
Never worry.
Next we have Travis Cole, who says, no doubt my own for the John chapter has to go to Ghost for finding his way back to the Wall and John. For Sansa's chapter, I gotta give some dap in my own to Littlefinger for hanging Marillion out to dry like he's deserved since we met him at the inn in the crossroads in A Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Amen.
Very true.
Our good buddy Jeff Lightfoot wrote in and says, oh, I love this. It's a singular one. My own, but for both chapters, goes to Winterfell. Even though it is in ruins waiting to be rebuilt, courtesy of the Boltons and Mace Hardware... Its presence looms big over both chapters. Jon potentially getting all he ever wanted and being named Lord of Winterfell, and Sansa's snow model of the castle providing her with peace and almost a sense of fun for the first time since she left its walls. I preferred the show where she slapped Robin and just added in my own mind her slapping him with the head of the doll she ripped. Their faces connect. And also, Jeff, a man who is thorough, side own to Micah's Cotter Pike voice in my head saying, quote, if you muck this up, I'm going to rip your liver out and eat it raw with onions. Which I think is everybody's taking turns quoting that this episode. Hashtag mm-hmm. for the watch.
That was, that was a good impression of Micah.
I was going to say.
That was
Hannah, do you want to go too before we're done here?
No, I think I'm going to pass, but thank you.
All right. We also heard from Cameron Ross. For John, I'm giving it to the crows for doing something smart and electing John to King Crow status. For Sansa, it goes to Littlefinger for not playing Lysa, but for his experiment on seeing if fish can fly. Wow.
This hashtag.
Hashtag hope there's a river down there.
What a splash.
Literally.
Better that than splat. Ariadna Quiano on Facebook. My John own goes to Sam for being a tricksy one. And my Sansa own goes to Catelyn for being the only woman Littlefinger ever loved.
True love.
Aw.
And last for Facebook, we have Jen Wyman, who says, my own for John goes to Pip for this quote. You call us fools. We're not the ones who got chosen as the 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. Can we also discuss the fact that Jon is the 998th Lord Commander? I take this as proof that Jon is dead and that we will have a total of 1,000 Lord Commanders before the series is done. Hashtag too much of a coincidence. Own for Sansa goes to Peter for, as always, having the situation in hand and immediately framing Marillion for Lysa's murder.
You know, if Jon gets resurrected and is like sort of a different person due to the magical means by which he's resurrected, he could be both 998th and 999th Lord's Commander.
Maybe the thousandth one too, if we get lucky.
Yeah, maybe if he dies again.
It is possible.
Yeah, I do think it's out. Like it's cool that they're so close to 1,000 and keep lingering around that big number.
All right, going over to the email inbox, we heard from our good friend Nick Hartley, who says, "My own for John goes to John for being the best sport ever. He goes from finally admitting he's always wanted to be a Stark in the Lord of Winterfell, complete with plan for babies and the ladies at the wall." The thought of that is still fresh when he learns he's not the 998th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, and he doesn't totally freak out. Hell, he only takes one drink. Talk about going with the flow. My own for Sansa goes the only person it can / should go to. Littlefinger. What an amazing reveal that he's been behind all the events of these books so far. He had Jon Arryn killed, so Ned was asked to be Hand. He turned the Starks against the Lannisters with a letter to Kat. And her brash actions. You always knew he was a player in the game, but it's truly impressive to learn he almost is more Varys than Varys.
More Varys than Varys.
He
so out-Varyses
Varys.
That's perfect.
And a few other things. Eric, did you pick up on the Tansy reference and remember Hoster Tully on his deathbed? We did.
Yeah, I'm so glad that was brought up on this show.
And as far as the shouting Nick Hartley does not so, at the Goo Crew, Zach, I live in Cincinnati, so if you go back to Indie PopCon, I'll try my best to make that happen.
Nick Hartley does not so.
No, he does not. And
can you say
that is
your
one
best Cotter Pike.
Nick Hartley does not so.
There you go. He does not so.
And just so Jeff doesn't feel cheated, if you muck this up, I'm gonna rip your liver out and eat it with raw onions.
There you go.
Just for you, Jeff.
I guess it was eat it raw with onions, but eat it with raw onions. Same fucking thing.
I love onions. Oh, they keep me warm at night.
All right. Well. Just like Nick and all of the other listeners, you can get in touch with our show in a number of different ways. You can tweet at us at Game of Owns on Twitter, scroll upon our Facebook wall at facebook.com/Game of Owns, or shoot us an email at contact@GameOfOwns.com.
Guys, it's unbelievable that we're so close. And I know Zach said this earlier, but to the epilogue, it's just a page away from where we left off.
It is. All the to-do that was made about this particular chapter not appearing in the show thus far, you will understand the pain that we've gone through in the last several seasons not seeing this take place. And I think it's going to make for a really, really great discussion coming up on our next episode.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it.
Just want to remind everybody that there is one other way that you can get in touch with the show, and that is over on iTunes.
Yes.
It is the month of December, which is crazy, which not only means that winter is coming, but it means that nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable when you rate and review the show. We do ask that you review the show because it's a great way for others to find out that we are out there, that we podcast about Game of Thrones. We're always hearing, whether it's through social media, through email, or even in the reviews themselves, that people are coming on board for the first time. And iTunes is just a great way, these reviews, for potential listeners to find out about the show and become a part of the community, which we love so much. And love interacting with all of you on a regular basis.
And lastly, we don't forget about Patreon, which we talked a little bit about at the beginning of the show. There's lots of great content on Patreon. Can I do this? I feel scared. Okay.
You can. You were doing great.
Okay. There's lots of great new content on Patreon, including chapter 10 of our Frolicking in New York and some extra recording from the beginning of our episodes that you don't get to hear. So go check it out and support the show.
Patreon.com/goo is the address there.
Thank you, Eric.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Well, guys, until next week.
Can't hype it up enough.
The past is already written. The ink is dry.
The ink is
finally,
dry.
Finally, you will read.
Winter's coming.
Well, hey, no, you never know. I mean, hell, if that happens, Hannah and I are going to go read, and you and Zach can do next week's episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it comes
I'm
out.
I'm just kidding. But no, seriously, this chapter that's upcoming is something that has been talked about a lot in the fan community, particularly those that are book readers who were anticipating seeing this scene play itself out at the end of season 3, maybe the end of season 4 for some. We can certainly begin to speculate if this will ever be included, this particular character who makes an appearance in the show. And I think it'll make for a really great episode. Like I said earlier, the fact that this is the culmination of A Storm of Swords, that this is how you're left when you finish the third book, it blew my mind. I hope it has the same effect on both you and Zach as well, and on me and Hannah as we go ahead and do this reread. We're at the end of A Storm of Swords. It's really crazy to think about. It's taken us a little bit of time. We had season 5 in between, but next week we're going to be there, and then who knows what happens after that. We're going to have to figure it out.
It's always natural just to have this book by my side. It'll be weird holding a different one.
The epilogue is coming. Looking forward to it next week. We'll see you then.
See you then.
See you then.